Good morning, good afternoon, good effing evening. Your asses are tuned into Gem Hunt, god damn it. This is a horror movie podcast. If you didn't know, now you know. My name is Cody, and I've got all my money tied up in foreign VHS tapes that don't even play here in the good old US of A.
I'm Beth, and Ted Cruz ate my son.
I'm Buggy, and I've got something big planned, but I'm not gonna tell you about.
Ooh.
Cool, cool, cool. We are your hosts. Every other week, we review a horror film that, for whatever reason, has managed to fly under the radar. Our only criteria is the movie we review must have less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. I have something to say about this later. Had a confounding revelation, but yeah. We'll get to it. Let's talk about some shit. I want to pull the curtain back on the Gem Hunt sausage making just for a second, because, dear listener, you might think that these episodes just fall out of a sausage tree. But they exist in the context of all the sausage meat that is and that came before. And the thing is, you have to wash your hands before you start slopping around in the sausage meat bowl. Otherwise, you might have a little bit of shit on your hands, and then you get the shit bacteria in the sausage. And the last thing we want to do is send out sausage with cryptosporidium. I don't know if you know about cryptosporidium. The EPA has very strict standards on cryptosporidium. You have one iota of that and you're fucked. Long story short, I was a bit concerned about the audio quality of the last episode, but I hear it was fine. Yes? No?
According to me, who's not an expert, but I couldn't notice anything.
I had a minor freak out thanks to the magic of modern technology, I guess, was able to rein it back in. But I decided to buy a new mic because of that, which I'm testing on my voice tonight. It cost me $24.95. Hopefully there's no shit in our sausage this week.
How many mics do you have?
I don't know. 20, maybe. They all do something different.
No, I know. We had this conversation because I have a lot of shoes.
What do they do?
Different stuff for different struts.
Okay. Anyway.
Okay. Let's talk about Cuckoo. God damn it.
Buggy, you have not seen it yet.
I haven't. I don't even think it's been explained to me. I have no interest.
I think going in with lowered expectations the way I went into Long Legs might serve you, and there's some really cool stuff about it. So I think the hopes were a little high, though.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. So, Cuckoo, new movie, recently been out in theaters. It was written and directed by Tilman Singer, who's a German filmmaker who made the film Lose in 2018. It's a film that we really liked. We were excited about Cuckoo, and it's getting a positive response, I think, but I don't know, man. It just kind of didn't quite work for me the way I was hoping it would.
And it might have been like a style over substance thing. I don't know. I think there are things about it. And I think maybe if you went in without being super excited about it, you might love it. There are definitely some good points. I want people to see it and see what they think. But Buggy, you should see it.
Okay.
I think it's going to be at the Academy next week.
I'll probably
just
like wait until I can.
So you can watch it at home.
Yes.
But yeah, it just felt like it dragged.
Yeah. I think the thing that we liked about Lose, maybe those things are not what American audiences get excited about, and the stuff in Cuckoo that
is.
Yeah, it is what American audiences are excited about. So who knows? Maybe it will work, and it just didn't work for us. Maybe we should just move to Europe.
We're just too European for this movie. Yeah. No, it felt like it had like similar vibes, but then made more palatable. I don't know. And maybe that's stupid. Maybe we just went in and we were like, this is going to be so awesome. And then it wasn't.
There were some cool things in it. It wasn't a waste of time. Wasn't as good as I was hoping, though.
Yeah.
But fuck that shit. Let's talk about found footage. Because a lot of people can't stand these movies. But there's a growing contingent of seriously devoted found footage fans out there. What do you guys think about found footage as a subgenre?
I mean, there are some found footage movies I genuinely enjoy. And I think, you know, it can be tedious at times, especially because it is, you know, kind of a way of filming where you're not going to see as much, I guess. It's not very cinematic. It's someone holding a camera and like talking to it. And it's a lot of like implied things.
And then if it isn't that way, you're like, how the fuck would they get this shot?
Right.
You know, like if it goes too far the other way, you're like, okay, sure, you did that on your
and
handheld.
There's a plethora of like shitty ones for sure. The same way, like there's just a bunch of dog shit horror movies in general. And mm-hmm. I love a lot of them. And I mean, personally, I love Grave Encounters. That's kind of like a hit or miss for people. And I don't think it's like genuinely like terrifying. There are moments that freaked me out. But I think it's a creative. I think that found footage kind of provides a creative way for, you know, making a horror film. I think there are like interesting, you know, things you can do with found footage you can't do with other films in that way. So I kind of enjoy it if it's done well. It just depends.
Yeah, it's a good device. Like, it's a good vessel that you can fill up or fuck up, I guess. There's some that I really like. I think sometimes it's scarier than movies that are, like, set up and scripted because it feels more real.
If the, like, actors, that's really a big part of it, too.
Right.
If they're good and they're convincing, it kind of makes the movie. And there's, like, fun ways where you can be gimmicky and more comedic about it. But there are also, like, genuinely terrifying performances of people just, like, having human moments where they're, like, realizing
snotting,
they're gonna die.
Snotting all
you know,
over.
People love the Blair Witch scene, you know, we're gonna die out here. Like, and that is, you know, as though that was not, like, the first found footage horror movie I've ever seen, like, it still genuinely made me uncomfortable because that is an uncomfortable thought. And it is like sad to watch people like slowly starve to death and die, you know, in like a scary forest situation with a witch.
I mean, I would say that maybe it wasn't the first, but it definitely birthed the movement.
Mm-hmm. Do you, so you probably, you might know this, Buggy, but like when it came out, because Cody and I were in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
It had a website. People thought it was real. Like, it really was, like, the first round of people that saw it thought it was actually a found documentary.
Like, someone found it. And that's
which is a cool trope, too. Like,
kind of an interesting thing that happens.
Cool advertising.
And the movie we're talking about kind of has that same, you know, rumor going around where it is interesting where you can trick people in a very, like, unique way and scare the shit out of them, make them, you know, suspend disbelief a little bit and, you know, it almost feels like you're actually watching these people and the stakes are real. I think it can really feel that way, again, if it's well done. But I haven't seen many that, like, make me shit my pants in that way. But they're out there for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. You have any one or two, three maybe favorites that you've seen that you would elevate to, you know, found footage classic status in your opinions?
I bet we're all going to have the same ones.
We'll see.
Lake Mungo.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
The fucking good ghost story, and the format really helps make it feel good.
More real, too.
Yeah, we were talking about this one called, is it The Triangle?
Yeah,
Triangle.
The Triangle.
The Triangle. Have you seen that one? It's like a desert one.
Yeah, it's kind of a cult. There's like a dinosaur bones emanating of some kind of signal. I don't think it was well seen. I don't think a lot of people liked it. We're kind of the anomalies on that one. I know you said Grave Encounters. I need to watch that again.
I haven't seen it, I don't think.
I really like both of them.
Maybe I was too critical of it.
There,
I liked the concept. There was almost like a House of Leaves concept in that movie where like the space was moving and expanding. Yeah.
It's interesting too, because in the second movie they really expand on like what's going on with the hospital in a way I found kind of interesting. They're not like genuinely scary, you know. I think there are jump scares that freaked me the fuck out when I first watched it, and I think they're just kind of creative and fun. And they're goofy, they're gimmicky. They're not really supposed to be serious, but I feel like that kind of served it well. And that also kind of made like the moments where I was like, oh, that did actually scare me kind of more surprising. I was like, this is a funny movie, but also why did that scare me? And, you know, the effects aren't great, but it still to me holds up.
Another one's Wreck, obviously Wreck.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. such a good one too. Yeah. And it's genuinely terrifying. I thought of one, but it like left my brain immediately. And I'm sad now because I can't remember.
Well, I had a few on my list. Already talked about Lake Mungo. That's one of the classics. I love that movie. Wreck or Record. I never know if I'm supposed to say Wreck or Record. I've heard it both ways. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. I just say Wreck.
Either or.
Fuck it.
It's shorter.
Yeah.
Easier.
One of my favorite, not just found footage movies, but one of the movies that's becoming one of my favorite horror movies that I've seen multiple times that forced you guys to watch this. Noroi the Curse, Japanese oh, movie no, from yeah. 2005.
Oh, yeah.
That I was, love that son that's of a bitch. Great movie. Yeah, so good.
It's scary.
It mm-hmm. is. It's really good. And it's like weird in a very like fun way, too.
Hell yeah.
It's unique, to say the least.
Can I take a moment to say how much I hated Skinamarink?
Fair enough.
But really also, I was I proud of those guys for footage, slipping yeah. it by. Slipping yeah, one
in, yeah. I think it's just not. Filmed in a very like aggravating way, which is akin to found footage.
I just
footage.
Think that guy got that into major theaters and people went to see it. And it was, I think that's funny.
Yeah. Funny. There's a movie called My Little Eye from 2002. I don't know if many people have seen it. Maybe if you're a huge found footage fan. Kind of like a reality show kind of thing. Maybe we should watch it someday. It's pretty good. I even like some of the like webcam, Zoom meeting, mm-hmm. chat room movies like Unfriended and Host. I thought those were fun, actually. Mm-hmm. I had a good time with those.
What was the video game one?
Oh, the video game one?
We watched it like a couple Halloweens ago, and it was like they're in a video game and like stay overnight in this haunted house.
Oh, yeah. That was... Oh, God damn it.
Did you see that, Muggy? It's like... And people were like liking and commenting
like
on this.
Yeah, side. He's a YouTuber.
It's a YouTube.
Oh, was it the comedy one?
Where yeah,
it was kind of a comedy.
Oh, yeah. We should have. Oh, I should have looked God. This up. I yeah, just thought of it right
I
now.
Totally
should I take
on
a pause?
It?
And
yeah. Well, you can. You yeah. can.
I here, what? Well, I have a couple more you while do, you're yeah. looking
okay,
it up.
Okay, I'll look it up.
There's a movie that came out a while back that I think kind of has developed a cult following called The Taking of Deborah Logan that is really good and actually really scary and kind of sad. It's like a look at aging and dementia mm-hmm. and Alzheimer's. And that's scary, but then just like the concept scary as well. God damn. Why can't I remember the name of that?
I don't know.
Totally, we watched it like 2 years ago.
This is going to have to be cut this,
probably
cut
like
this.
Something stupid like Deadstream.
Or that
something. Is right! I just screamed in the mic. Woo! The That's young Deadstream. Brain has it again.
Yeah. Did you do that on purpose or did you just make up
no.
a name?
No, I actually was like, this is what sounds right to my brain. I thought.
Have you seen that movie?
We watched it all together.
Oh.
No, we didn't.
No, did we? Well, maybe we did.
I remember. I mean, I remember watching a comedy like horror stream where he went to a haunted house. I remember that.
Yeah, that movie was a lot of fun.
I kind of enjoy the Hell House movies.
Oh, they're the Hell House movies are great. Yeah.
They're like, again, like kind of stupid, but yeah. I enjoyed them. I thought they were fun.
Yeah, those shits are pretty fun. I would even say that the film Cannibal Holocaust may have been one of the earliest found footage films.
Yes.
Because the whole premise of that movie is they found the footage of those fuckers getting eaten.
I have never watched that movie.
I have, and it's
I've heard
dumb.
About it all my life, and I just, the idea that there's real animal murder.
It's
like,
pretty rough.
It is, it's rough, and it's interesting to look back that like required a whole court case, and it was mm-hmm. like this whole big thing. Like, is this real? Is it not?
Yeah, the lore of it's almost better than the
That's
movie.
That's what I was
exactly.
gonna say. I'd like to read like a book about it.
It's
more
like
than
an
I
interesting
watch
story, just like how the movie was made and the like controversy that followed. But the actual movie itself is just like kind of rough to watch, and then there's just a lot of like.
So I watched The Green Inferno, you know, and I feel like
yeah, that's
is that what that's called?
Yeah,
inspired by, and I'm like, that's close enough.
Yeah,
yeah, that movie was kind of fun. I feel bad saying it because I feel like everyone wanted to hate it. I think most people did hate it, but I had kind of a good time with
it. I feel
it.
Like we saw it like in a mall theater and we were the only fucking people there too.
We
something.
Were, yeah, there was
like one other.
It had already started and we were the only people in the theater and like 15 minutes into the movie, two people walked in. I think that's happened to me multiple times where I'm like, I'm going to be the only person here. And then, like, at the last minute, some asshole walks in. I'm like, dang it.
Remember, Buggy and I went to see, like, the, what was it? The Muppet movie, the new one. Am I a Muppet or a Man?
Yeah, it's just called the Muppet movie.
We were in the theater and there was, like, some altercation in the lobby. Do you remember this?
No, I don't. Mm.
It was like somebody was fighting, like, for real. Like, it seemed like there was a situation and we were the only people. The theater, and it was kind of, I was kind of terrified in the Muppet movie because I was like, am I gonna have to like I had eyes on the door anyway. Yeah. That's a definite, I just took a detour, but that was a real life horror movie.
Yeah,
it was at the mall.
Anyway, the reason we're talking about found footage is because this is the first found footage movie that we've done here on Gem Hunt tonight. This is Buggy's pick. Do you want to announce what we are reviewing?
Yeah, we're reviewing the 2015 mockumentary movie Savage Land. I watched this when I was probably like, I don't know. I was 12, maybe, I want to say. Ugh. And it scared the shit out of me. It freaked me out a lot. And I really remembered also just liking it and thinking it was scary. So I wanted to revisit once again and see if it still holds up.
Nice. I was gonna ask. I was gonna. Well,
thanks,
bud. I was gonna ask you how you selected it, but you kind of covered that.
I did.
Did you know that I've seen this movie before?
Yes, I think because I remember I was freaking out about what movie to pick, and I texted mom, and she was like,
"Oh, she spoiled it."
She did. But what did you think? Did you remember?
Did I? I thought we were all together, and it was like, should we pick it? Even though two.
Well,
people
that
have
was
seen it.
The point was like,
I think
you texted
we were phone
me.
Tagging it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I watched it when Beth had COVID and I was hiding out upstairs and I was just alone up there and we were having an ice storm and I just randomly picked that movie. Mm-hmm. I think I might have had it on a watch list or something. And after I watched it, I immediately thought, that was pretty good. I wish I had watched this with someone else. I gotta like put this on the back burner to watch again. But it was one of those movies where it's falls down the priority list. There's so many new movies and so many rewatch movies. Mm-hmm. How do you pick a rewatch movie to fit in all that shit? But I'm glad that we watched it again because I had been wanting to. So good pick. Let's go into some details here. As you mentioned, this was released in 2015. I was looking at the schedule of this or the timeline of this. It actually played at a film festival in Mexico in 2015. Didn't hit digital in the U.S. until, like, 2017, which I didn't know. I just, you know, I thought maybe it just hit everywhere in 2015, but I guess not. It was written and directed by Phil Guidry, Simon Herbert, David Whelan, and I have not been able to find any information out about these guys, really.
Me neither.
You know, in the reviews of the movie, they don't really talk about the directors that much. I found one review that talked about them a little bit. So Phil Guidry seems to be the guy that has the most extensive resume out of all of them. And get this, he's worked exclusively in sports documentaries.
Whoa.
But despite having not a lot of film experience, seems like they put together a pretty dang good motion picture here with this one. A couple other details. The music was done by a group called Zoviet France from Newcastle, England. They're like an ambient electronic duo. I listened to a little bit of their stuff. It's kind of cool. A lot of the soundtrack is kind of creepy ambient, but there is like a cool twangy desert guitar track that kind of kicks things off and comes back into the movie a couple times throughout there.
This is an interesting thought because I've heard discussion, engaged in discussion about whether or not having a soundtrack, a music, a score in a found footage or movie takes people out of it or does it add to it or...
This is a good... Let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
I feel like I want to talk about that exact thing in the context of another thing.
It looks
like
we all have thoughts.
Yeah, we have a lot of thoughts. A couple more details. Turner Jumanville did the cinematography. I thought there was some really good camera work in this. He's done a lot of documentary work and some softcore porn stuff. Oh, so nice. That's interesting.
Go Turner.
Check that out.
This is starring Noah Montez, who played Francisco Salazar. He's kind of the key character in this film. He's also an LA-based artist and photographer.
Oh, okay.
He's not an actor primarily. Len Wein played Len Matheson, who was the combat photographer in this film. He's actually a comic book writer and editor who created the character of Swamp Thing for DC Comics and Wolverine for Marvel. So he was a pretty big deal in the comic book world. Unfortunately, passed away in 2017, probably not long after this came out in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's kind of sad. Lawrence Ross plays himself. He's an author with an MFA from UCLA. His written books covering topics such as the history of African-American fraternities and sororities, the African diaspora, and black pornography. He's a reporter who has also appeared on NPR. So he kind of plays himself and does a very good job kind of embodying that role of a talking head, probably because he has been one.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to note, Heather Moore plays the news anchor, did a pretty believable job as like a news anchor doing a interview of someone in prison, I thought. So that's the primary cast. There's some other people, but I think those are the good shout outs. Where can you watch this sumbitch? It's on Vudu. It's on Tubi. It's on Screambox. You can rent it on Amazon or Microsoft. There's a full HD version streaming on YouTube right now. That's going to get into something I'm going to talk about later. There was never a DVD or a Blu-ray release of this. It went straight to digital, which seems to be the case for a lot of these found footage movies.
Hmm.
Let's talk about what this is about.
Well, so this is going back to my roots, you know, taking notes for school. I took an insane amount of notes for this movie, which I now realize is not necessary and is kind of overwhelming me. But I did provide myself like a basic summary because I was like,
you can't read three pages.
I like when people tell me a play by play of a movie, I will still watch it. But I know that's really not like everyone's favorite. So I wanted to be mindful of that.
I feel like your mother might have told you that a time or two. I
I listen to people talk about something and like hours of it, and then I'll read it myself. But
right.
Or listen to it or watch it or whatever. Not the point. So Savage Land is a mockumentary style horror film. It is kind of unique because it is found footage, but it's mainly like just a documentary. There is no real footage except for like of the actual event that takes place in this movie, just of, you know, interviews with the main character and then also just interviews with, you know, other experts. But this the main setting takes place after this event in a fictional town on the border in Arizona called Sangre de Cristo.
The blood of Christ.
Yeah, she
does. Right.
You know.
I actually didn't know. So
Sangre de, yes, you did.
I don't. Okay, not the point. So this takes place after a massacre that occurred where all 57 residents within this small town were brutally murdered. And this is sort of taking place, you know, a while after that, where the only survivor from that town is actually being accused of the crime. And it's sort of taking place as his appeal is being processed because he was already tried for the 57 murders. But very intriguing, you know, evidence that was actually deemed inadmissible, I believe, where like they couldn't use it, whatever, not the point. But it was intriguing enough to like question whether or not he was actually guilty, which that was a big question regardless, because how does one man brutally murder like 57 people in one go? How does that happen? Yeah. And you know, how does that occur? Especially considering the fact that like no weapon is really found, you know, on his person when he's found, because he's found, you know, sort of wandering around days after the actual events, the actual massacre, by a truck driver. And the only thing that is found on his person is like a camera, I believe. Mm-hmm. And if anything else, very insignificant items. So he's found like just traumatized and pretty much comatose. And he's immediately, you know, the only suspect and is tried as the murderer, which sort of goes into the, I would say, subplot. You know, the main plot of this movie is what actually happened this night. What is the evidence that's so compelling? And like, what is the story going on here? Because while this was one of, you know, in this fictional timeline, one of the worst massacres to occur in like U.S. history, it's not something that was like, you know, heavily publicized. It was not something that was talked about, you know, very much except for within that community and also the community of Hinesman, which is the most kind of relevant part of that. This is the county where the sheriffs who are, you know, accusing and arresting our main character, Francisco Salazar, where they reside. And that sort of goes into the subplot where it becomes more of a discussion of, you know, immigration policies, sort of corrupt police force, how, you know, potentially having someone like Francisco Salazar accused of this crime could, you know, help someone's political career, especially within the neighboring county of Hinesman. So that's like basically the like gist of what we're dealing with. The main compelling piece of evidence too that is presented. This is pretty much the only footage we have of what's going on. You know, we don't get any like actual scenes from the actual massacre. We have these series of photos that sort of are the only, I don't know exactly, like linear timeline of what actually occurred this night. And they were taken by Francisco Salazar. He is sort of depicted as this loner photographer who likes to take pictures of roadkill. And he documented the entire night with his camera. And that is the evidence he has. No one will use it in court because what he has documented is pretty much unheard of. It's horrifying. It sort of tells a way different narrative than, you know, a crazy man who went on a rampage. It basically is photos of people eating each other and killing each other. It's like zombie footage, essentially, or some sort of, you know, creature feature. Like these are people who are infected with something attacking each other, which sort of lines up with, you know, again, like the injuries of these people, too. That's like a big point of contention for how did Francisco, you know, do this. They all have bite marks in them. They're all horrifically mutilated. And most of these bodies, like, they can't find or identify. So it just starts to become this big question of what actually happened here. Is this possible? Is it possible either way for one person to do something like this, or, you know, for something so insanely horrific to occur? And what does that mean also on a grander scale, like for other people? And I mean, there's a lot more to it. Again, like I touched on like the immigration aspect. That's like the key part of this movie.
Yeah. And I think that's one I don't know, not to, you did a super great job. I don't know if you said he is an illegal immigrant.
He is.
Yeah.
And that's a huge like, that piece Francisco Salazar. Mm-hmm. That's why when I mentioned like there is like something to be gained politically from this murder trial is Francisco Salazar is an immigrant. He is not from this country. He's not a citizen.
And he's an illegal immigrant.
And that sort of adds to like this movie comes at a very prominent or like important time in sort of like the timeline of like the border crisis, because this takes place a year after the official border crisis is declared. So this really is like dropping us into like before, you know, the 2016, like, you know, political frenzy that had to do with like the border crisis and how to protect our borders. And it really takes the narrative of like the crazed, violent, you know, illegal immigrant who brings drugs and crime into the country. And that's how Francisco's painted. That's how many immigrants who are working in these border towns are painted by, you know, the neighboring county of Hinesman, the sheriff, whose name is, I think, John Pirano? I don't know exactly.
Yeah, Pirano, I think that's right.
He's kind of, I would say, like the overarching villain of this film, because his whole point, because he's, again, like part of the prosecution accusing Francisco of this crime, is that this is setting an example for the country and also for people coming into this country as well on how to behave. And it also really helps further his career. He's been consecutively sheriff for 7 terms in his county. So he has a lot to gain from
term limits.
Yeah, term limits.
Right. He has a lot to gain from, you know, taking this narrative of this violent illegal immigrant, you know, murdering these innocent people and completely, you know, just again, like dehumanizing him as much as possible. And there's interviews of people who, you know, sort of agree with John Perano and like, you know, the sort of mentality of, you know, that white nationalist ideal is like, you know, just a bunch of people talking about, you know, their opinions regarding, you know, immigration, regarding people, you know, they even know, people they've met. Just a lot of, you know, hateful
scapegoating, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's very, that's like the most important part of this film. I wanted to like, you know, give you enough context of what's like the horror plot, but it's really more so a commentary on like how someone with an agenda can really, you know, make fear the only like prominent thought as opposed to like logic, how, you know, you can have literal evidence that proves someone's innocence, but if you plant this idea in someone's brain, it's not going to matter. There's just a bunch of interviews with the sheriff. He's like very horrible, honestly, genuinely. And then Gus Greer is a podcaster whose voice is also used. I don't think he's real.
AM 970, Hinesman, Arizona. This is the Gus Greer Show, and I'm Gus Greer. And for the next 2 hours, you are going to get the most valuable thing that you've ever had in your life, an education from me. The Mexican, the Cholo, the Raza. It's a culture that celebrates violence. They glorify death because they have nothing else to look forward to.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but that's an interesting thing we should look up. Is that a real guy? I definitely have that in my notes about this being kind of a satire about those super extreme conservative leaning shock radio hosts. But if that's real footage, it could still be satire, but that would be interesting if that was real footage. I don't think it is, but
it's
interesting thing to look up.
It is. Yeah. It does seem to be parodying like a lot of.
He's like, you know, a Rush extreme. Limbaugh kind of guy.
Yeah, and I wrote down some of the things he said, too. And the gist of what he said was, you know, the government's not going to save you. He said, action has consequences, ladies and gentlemen, and inaction has more serious consequences. So he's very much amping up and riling up a lot of people. Implanting this idea in people's brains that you have to fight for your country yourself and no one's going to help you. So this is like in our hands and this is a huge crisis that needs to be, you know, fought for. If we don't fight now, you know, we're fucked is basically what he's trying to say to all these people.
Yeah. I mean, you sold me on it.
You can really see the DNA of this kind of thinking now. I mean, it had been going on for decades.
It's definitely like, you know, it comes at a time where this is just sort of a building tension. Mm-hmm. It's growing. Again, 2014 is officially when the U.S. and the United States declared a border crisis. So it's really like focusing and centering on, yes, there's also this like horrifying subplot of zombies and the photos, which we can talk about more in the discussion, scary, in my opinion. I was scared. I was uncomfortable. But just as equally uncomfortable with the constant like blatant racism, you know, xenophobia, this like just building tension and hatred that was sort of, you know, the foundation of the movie.
And you can see how those tactics over the last 10 years have worked, right? Like this was a wedge issue or a like political strategy that has fucking worked, you know?
Yeah, it has.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it's like how we
it's definitely just modeling a lot of like the same things we've heard consistently, with just more of like a, you know, an interesting horror plot. And the whole movie really just follows again like certain experts giving their opinion about Francisco. Do they think that, you know, Salazar is capable of committing such a crime? And as they do, they sort of unravel the story that he, you know, provided with the pictures, sort of what the night actually could have looked like. And that kind of paints, you know, Francisco just living his life normally. And then suddenly he's attacked. The first picture, I believe, is him. I don't remember what he's doing in the first picture, but it has something to do, I think, with he takes a picture of the hills and there's people all over the hills and the sun's going down. But they're hard.
So I do. I don't want to like jump the gun, but the photographs are so.
Yeah, let's. Key. I think we should really get maybe hyper focused on a couple things here because I definitely don't want to overlook the photos.
You don't want to just talk about vibes.
No, not just vibes. I do like vibes though, but. Let's talk about the photo piece because so this movie builds its entire structure around a series of photos that Francisco Salazar had taken on the night in question, and that kind of becomes the narrative. So let's talk about those photos. I had that later on my list, but I think it's such a key part that I think we could just dive into those right now.
And it's unique because it also what makes it almost not like a, you know, found footage. It's all like a story in pictures, really.
So the photos are the found footage. That and it's is still, the found footage. They are still photographs.
These fucking photos, man.
One thing I want to say about them is what I thought they looked like is the art from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
They did kind of.
Oh, yeah, good call. I hadn't thought about that the first time I watched it, but you're totally right.
It has that quality of like, they're pictures, but they're like almost like bleeding or something. They're like.
Yeah, well, they're
smudgy
like.
Smudgy or something because they're from far away.
And they're in motion too. So it like mm-hmm. makes right. things look like longer and like grosser.
Right, because it's film. It has to be developed. It's not like.
It's all crazy.
Yeah, so they give a timeline and that was the evidence. I think we said that. The evidence that wasn't admissible was the roll of film they found later.
They found it later too. The truck driver who had found him had actually, there's again part of the main plot is there's a bunch of, you know, experts. One of those experts is Ross. He's the person who wrote the book about this.
Oh, Lawrence. Right.
Lawrence Ross. He got a call, like a voicemail from that truck driver who had picked up Salazar. And he said he had found something under, you know, the seat. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. And he said, like, he wanted to stay out of it. And he actually got in an accident. A week after that.
Oh, yeah. They kind of made that seem like maybe it was a conspiracy.
Well, they did
yeah.
because they said the first responders were Heinzman police.
Ooh, Heinzman. Fuck the Heinzman
police.
So,
and that's like the main, you know, sort of corrupt aspect of the film is the neighboring county, the closest law enforcement is Heinzman police. And that's the sheriff and that's, you know, the deputy. And they're like, the main, you know, like evil force, I would say, in this movie, besides the zombies.
So I think it's really important. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so we have scapegoats, illegal immigrants. We have your common villain, the cops, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have this photographic documentary evidence, which also is not super clear. Like saying zombie. This movie does such a good job of not showing you too much. It's like you see mm-hmm. this and you're like they're blurry, they're people in motion, people have bite marks, including Salazar.
That's another interesting thing.
So he was obviously attacked too.
And the, you know, the only documents they have of like the autopsies of the remaining bodies is they had similar bite marks to the ones that Salazar had on his hand.
Yeah, right. And they didn't match Salazar's teeth.
None of the, yes, the victims, it was not his. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. I feel like it's like it could have been this conspiracy narrative. It could have been this conspiracy narrative, or it could be this supernatural one, which they obviously, the documentary evidence leads to. And I just think that was a really cool, I'm getting into value judgments early. I just thought it was a cool way to do it, though. Yeah. I always do that. I'm always like, and this is the thing. But really,
it doesn't matter.
It's hard to, because it was a cool way to like sneak in the supernatural, kind of.
Right. Because it applies compelling. To the timeline of, you know, did he commit the crime? And the photos, I think, are just such a great way of also presenting this because, like you said, it's almost more scary because we don't know a lot. We don't know where these came from. Like, we don't know, like, what happened, like, where these zombies came from. We get, like, evidence that there had been, you know, instances specifically of, like, you know, workers again on the border, like working in fields, working in those areas, had been attacked by things. There had been like various
they found bones that had been chewed or whatever, not by vultures.
And there had been, you know, news articles saying that it was related to cartel murders and that it had something to do with the cartel. That's also a big part of it. And besides the people who died in the town, there were also 11 workers who were mutilated in the same way, which was another interesting thing, too, which makes up the 57 is there were the people who were murdered prior to the town.
Oh, got it.
Which could maybe mean why, like, maybe the people coming over the hill or maybe something related to that was related to that attack.
The photo of the people coming over the hill, which we've referenced a couple times, is so cool because it's, like, from far away and you could just look at it and not even necessarily see that they were people. I just love that. I really do love that about this movie is it's, they're, like, it's not overly, there's not, like, too much exposition, you know? It's, like, draw your own conclusions, but it gives you these feeling
of ghosts. Too, because of how it's a ghost town now, it just feels like suddenly this thing's happening and then it's over and everyone's gone.
Everyone's gone.
And it's like quick as, you know, in a couple of hours, this entire town, this entire community is just gone completely. And the photos are really interesting and they're scary as like the narrative builds, it builds along with the photos and escalates to like in a very effective way, in my opinion.
Yeah, they used them to tell the story instead of actually showing action. They used the photos to kind of build the storyline. And I think if you told someone, hey, here's a scary movie where they just show you photos, it'd be like, that's boring as shit. But the way that they plug them together and they have a guy walking you through the town, kind of pointing out where all the locations were while they're showing you the photos, it totally works.
Oh yeah, there's like a map crazy. With the dots.
Very investing. Using,
totally. One thing about the photos I wanted to talk about. So the character of Len Matheson, who is the combat photographer, who is the comic book artist in real life, he does a lot of analysis of the photos throughout the film as one of the talking heads. And he offers one of the best explanations of why the camera keeps rolling, which I think is one of the critiques of most found footage films, is why are you still shooting?
You're about to be killed.
Something scary happening. Like, what the fuck's going on? But he has this whole explanation of like, oh, well, you have the camera in your hand. You're invincible.
The amazing thing about being a photographer is so long as you are behind that lens, so long as you are shooting through that lens, you are indestructible. Every photographer I know feels the same way. While you're shooting, you can't be hurt. I have a stultifying fear of heights. I just looking out an upstairs window scares the hell out of me. In Nam, I used to spend half of my time hanging out of an open helicopter door, hanging onto a strap I wouldn't use as a belt, and shooting away because nothing could hurt me. As long as I had that camera in front of my face, nothing could hurt me.
Very cool. Like, it totally adds up. Like, a perfect way to, like, you know, I feel like this film was almost designed to rebut some of the criticisms of your standard found footage film.
No, which, I agree.
This is such a, like, it's such an interesting thing. Topical things, and so much has happened right now, and I'm not going to get too into politics. But that was one of the things during the recent, I don't know, you might want to cut this, the Trump assassination thing, the photographer from the Times, they were like, what the fuck were you doing still taking pictures? And that was exactly what he said. It's like you have your barrier.
I think that's a great, I think it's an interesting alignment.
Yeah.
Well, and the point I love that he made is also, this is, he said it's almost your responsibility as a human being to document it.
Like, and when that's your job for occurring, years, same with the,
you know, like, and these are the last moments of, like, these people. This is also, you know, an insane event that's occurring. Why, he's like, why wouldn't you take pictures of it if you could? Why wouldn't you be documenting this event? You know, like, it almost is your duty as a person.
We have a dog and cat chase going on as we're... I think also the photos are a good way to get at another thing that I know, Buggy, you really want to talk about, which is Grace
Putnam
and the Putnam family. And there's, very compelling photographs.
Again, I don't want to, like, be like, here's the entire movie. But aspect of this movie that makes it very compelling and it is really important is the fact that, you know, another like character assassination for Salazar is that he has pictures of, because he was, again, a photographer, just took pictures of whatever he saw before, prior to that, like roadkill. He was also very close with this family, the Putnam family, and specifically their children. And he had photos of Grace Putnam, one of their children, on his camera, which really added to the narrative that, you know, the Heinzman police, the sheriff, he really wanted to, you know, again, dehumanize Salazar as much as possible, but also make him out to be like a creep, a pervert. And here we
get, no, it's the same thing. It's the fucking pedo shit.
Exactly. That,
like, and so, yeah, he was working for the family. She's a little adorable girl, and he just had some photos of her that are not untoward in any way. It's just like, it's like, obviously, there's he loved her.
And it's also, you know, one of those things, too, where you can spin this however you want, where I see it as he's a photographer and what he does is document people and things. And it's sort of like, in my opinion, you know, thinking through like a photographer mindset, like I'm documenting this like child growing that I know this is a like nice day. This is a nice moment.
And again, there was nothing. It wasn't like, and she's shirtless.
No, it was like,
it's like this beautiful face of this little girl close up.
And she's holding a flower. And it just seems like he was like, this is a really cute moment that I want to document. But the Putnams are very important because they're also, you know, I think used as a way to dehumanize Salazar. There is also one other character.
Right, because they're like a nice white family. They're,
you know,
they're resurrecting the only church in town, which had been.
And he was working for them. They're
reestablishing like a ministry there or whatever.
There's the minister and family.
And they were sent there. Them and then a man named Ron Templeton is also, he's from Heinzman County, which is another like big part of it. He is one of the victims and he is kind of used, you know, loosely as a martyr in the sense of like he's a community man, you know, he's a family man people love. You know, he was brutally murdered.
So, yeah, these white people are American quotation marks heroes who perished in this thing.
Exactly.
And we have this illegal immigrant who is scapegoated as the obvious villain because he's othered and he's, you know.
Exactly. And it's convenient. And I don't want to get too much into the Putnams because I think, in my opinion, that was one of the scariest parts of the film is sort of what occurs with the Putnams.
Totally.
And their fate in this movie. I think it's quite disturbing and it is kind of shocking. You know, there's also photos that go along with it. And I want to, like, clarify, this movie is also TV-14. So it's not going to, like, show you, like, oh, here's someone's entire mutilated corpse.
Which is cool, too.
Again, implies a lot. But there are some
you have to imagine, which is sometimes the most effective way to do a scary thing. Instead is make of, you
like,
imagine it.
Yeah, like seeing something where you're really, like, into it and it's flowing. And then suddenly it's like, and there's a CGI fucking...
Because very rarely will some other, you know, human be able to create something more terrifying than, like, this implied version.
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean specifically, like, a person making a movie is what I'm saying.
Oh, right, right.
But, yeah.
I was going to say the scariest thing is humans.
They are very scary. But it...
I'm afraid of Americans.
And this is sort of towards the end of the, you know, film... The pictures from the Putnam family, I think, are some of the most terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of kickstarts the finale is because within Salazar, you know, documenting what happened to the Putnams, he's trying to find Grace, who happens to be missing that night. And she happens to be at the preschool, which I will also not talk about. But that is a pretty horrifying part of the movie. And it sort of gets us to the finale, the climax of what's actually going on that night.
Hells yeah. Oh, man, there's a lot of ways I could take this. There's so many things you can talk about this movie. It's very thought-provoking. I think I want to backtrack a little bit, just talk about the format a little bit, because so this fits under the found footage umbrella, but as you mentioned, it's a mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that it's almost believable. Like, I think you could trick someone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if no one... Like, if someone had never heard of this and you were like, oh, check out this documentary about this crazy thing that happened in a small Arizona border town, you could maybe trick someone because I think it is that well done, you know?
It did trick people, too.
Yeah. And when we were watching it, I was like, at first like, oh, some of this acting, you know, it's so obviously like the interviews, the talking heads are staged. And then Cody reminded me that's what all those fucking right. shows on like what are Discovery, yeah, like, whatever, they like all A&E. They feel like this.
No, you the watched... Learning Channel, mm-hmm. True that's Crime. And that's, channel. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like the Learning Channel, yeah, it's TLC. All just bullshit like this now. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it's weather stuff, but like there's a lot of true crime stuff. But I spent plenty of time over the last year sitting in a chair, drinking beers, watching this shit. Most of the time with the volume kind of down. And I could say this. If this was on, I'd be like, well, this is a pretty crazy documentary. And I would have right. probably never second guessed it if I wouldn't have went into it knowing it was a film. But I'd say this is actually better than a lot of that shit that you see on TV.
It just is. Because
some of the cinematography is really well done, the way it's put together.
No, they do a good job of like really keeping you invested and making you like actually, again, like suspend disbelief. And what's really interesting to me, and I don't know, like, if Cody, you wanted to get into this too, but one of the most searched things along with this movie is this real?
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
I saw that too.
That's
yeah.
one of the most Googled questions is this, are these photos real? Is this real? Which I think is, you know, just speaks volumes again about like the production of this movie and how effective it actually is. It's very well done, in my opinion. And it's obviously well done enough that it freaked the fuck out of people. Where they were Googling trying to figure out if they had to like worry about something.
Right.
You know yeah. what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't going to get into that in depth, but I think I want to spin that a little bit back towards some of the political discussion, which we've done a pretty good job covering. And this film, I would say any good horror film has some kind of social commentary, right? Some mm-hmm. kind of political message. Maybe not everyone, but that's kind of where you find a lot of the most cutting social commentaries is in horror films. And I think this does a really good job of capturing that anti-immigration message, the dehumanization. But I think there's some different perspectives that you could potentially draw from this, and I want to bring up two different perspectives that I did find in some reviews that I read. So the first, this is from Malevolent Dave, writing for malevolentdark.com. Mm-hmm. He offers the following perspective. It appears through most of the film that the writers intended to write a scathing rebuke of racist and xenophobic attitudes. And he cites some examples such as like the white sheriff and the footage of the white townsfolk in Hinesman County saying some racist shit. Then he goes on to say, yet, to conclude the film, the filmmakers also explicitly state that these monsters that destroyed Sangre de Cristo crossed the border and continued on a northbound march, kind of implying that this would validate the fears of the white townsfolk who are concerned with supposed evil crossing the border. Now, I don't know if I 100% agree with this take, but it is a take. This feels like a critique of anti-immigration sentiment, but then the so-called monsters are southbound invading northbound, you know? So I could see how you could read that into this film. Well,
or it could also be, you know, like, to hear Dave out for real. That's his name, right, Dave?
Yeah, it was a poorly written critique. But no,
what I want to say,
well, though... Well, I paraphrased it a
I
bit,
know,
but...
No, I read wait, that article, oh, you read too, that and one? I didn't think it was
him
very
out
good.
Because maybe, like, his opinion of it isn't necessarily, like, all the way we agree with it, right?
Right.
This could also be sort of a depiction of like the worst fears of these very like bigoted people realized.
Right. Mm-hmm.
'Cause I could also see this as sort of like,
That's interesting.
You know, like Nature Fights Back mm-hmm. is kind of what I think of.
Oh yeah. Shout out Evolution of Horror. They're doing Nature Bites Back right now.
There we go. But well, I don't know if this is the main point. I could see it also being sort of kind of like, realizing these people's fears in a very like extreme way.
Yeah, take that. Here's your
you know, like, oh, you're so scared about people bringing in drugs. Yeah. We'll get ready for this shit.
For them to eat your
food. You know, right. And maybe that's not the main point, but that could just, you know, it's not necessarily agreeing with them, right, when it's depicting that, but it could also just be like, you know, you're fear based off of racism is actually valid in the sense that there are fucking zombies or whatever now. You know what I mean? And maybe right. I'm not like...
Is this what you wanted? Here it is.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah. I'm just saying maybe it's, no. again, sort of like poking fun at like, oh, this is what you totally. Think is going to happen.
Satire, right? Satire. And
yeah. But not very funny. Very scary. Very scary.
Well, I mean, satire doesn't have to be funny. But it's, here's a...
Yeah.
Here's another take. This is like an opposite side of the spectrum take. This is from an article called The Bad Hombres of Savage Land, written by Vera Garcia in the Cornell Daily Sun. She said, the real monsters and rapists are already within our borders and have been for years. Doi. We refuse to believe that our problem was already there and seem to be set on believing that immigrants have brought us more problems. So that's kind of like the counter is like, you know, maybe the I keep saying monsters because I was trying to avoid the sort of like subgenre spoiler that this is a zombie movie.
I'm sorry, that's kind the of. Only word I can
but
think
it is,
of. I
know. It's still not it's fully, you never word. See like somebody eat True. Somebody's brains or no, somebody like
I'm using that term this, like extremely loosely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
But maybe that's not right.
Don't but yeah, worry. The that's... idea is like maybe they didn't come across the border. They've just been in our own borders this entire time, you know? Huh. And I think that's an interesting perspective. They're both interesting counterpoints. And I don't think the film necessarily gives you like a hardline answer of which end of the spectrum it's trying to
I mean, I
hold
think
up, which is kind of scary, I think.
That helps. I do think it kind of implies, because it's, again, using that sort of mentality. There's many times where these people are saying, like, this isn't happening here. These people are coming here and so bringing this. This mm-hmm. doesn't happen here. We don't do this to each other.
For sure.
Which I think kind of adds to this whole, like, idea of, like, oh, like, you know, there's no problems here. It's not, like, which I think is so ironic considering, like, where we live. Well, I love my country. I'm not going to act like I don't. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of crime. And that's not something that's just, like, brought here randomly. That's just been a thing. And it's been a problem.
I'm
just, like, everywhere else.
Yes.
Why?
Like, I've had something to say for so long.
Okay.
Which, for, okay, this movie makes racists look bad. Purposefully. You know, that is without saying. The article that you're talking about, I thought was very poorly written. The one that was saying that, oh, but they are coming from the South to the North. Mm-hmm. I was like, it had like grammatical errors and typos, and it just wasn't very good. So,
take that, malevolent Dave.
Sorry, damn, Dave. I am a grammar
I did not
nerd.
Read the article.
Right,
so.
I did though, and I was like, this is kind of weak. But I thought it was kind of a weak critique. I also think.
I'm trying to be unbiased media here. I'm
sure,
to
and
see
me
both
too.
Sides.
But I'm saying my read on it personally, not from any. I think this movie did have a clear political perspective. Mm-hmm. I think it had a message, and I think the racists look stupid. And one other thing that we should touch on is that in the Bloody Disgusting article, they were talking about how some of that was actual footage of the racist people.
Totally,
like
yeah.
they. Stumbled on the directors like ran into people that were actual like anti-immigrant
and were like interviewing
and
them,
they just
basically.
Used that footage in the movie yeah. because and so that's all I want to say
no,
I've been like
it,
I've been itching to say that I'm like I feel like there is no this movie like takes both sides or
no.
something which I feel like we were leaning that way as we
well,
were talking about it doesn't
I just wanted to bring up the bring it up as an interesting conversation
it is
point,
it is
you know?
I think it also it has a clear agenda but it also explores both sides of this argument. That's what I think is going on. Like, it's obviously damning one. It's damning these racist people and these corrupt officials who are, like, purposefully, you know, using an innocent person for their own political gain and agenda. But it is also kind of exploring, like, the mentalities of both of these groups and how they, like, rationalize the situation is kind of the way I see it. Like,
that's right. And it does a really smart job doing it. And the other thing that I've been wanting to say that I'm not getting to is The thing about Salazar is that he's very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, you basically just see him in like jail interviews, but he is obviously someone who's suffered. And then he's an art, like he's a photographer. He's an artist. He's a hardworking guy. I don't know. So that's the one other, the person you identify with in the movie is the guy who's being
and the little interviews accused. Kind of supporting him, like his sister, too. Mm-hmm. They're really making an effort to show you that there's an obvious group trying to dehumanize Salazar, mm-hmm. and there's a truth, which is that he is a human being. And it's quite clear, especially with the evidence provided, that he is not the person who did this. And this is not, like, his fault. He's a victim. Very clearly, or a survivor would be the better because he survived the night.
He's like he one
was
survivor.
A victim of also this attack, though. But he's alive, and that's why they're using him because he's the only person they can point to.
Yeah,
and who else are they going to point to? Themselves, the you know, obvious cracks in their own arguments and agenda. Like, that's why they pick him, is because it's the easiest.
Well, he's the only person to pick, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's like, what else? Mm-hmm. Is it supernatural, or is it this guy who fits our like little mold?
It's a classic, true crime trope is like, let's get the easiest one that we can get, and then we can close the case, and then we look good. And back to your point about like, oh yeah, political aspirations. It's like, if I close this case, I just get to be sheriff forever, you know?
And they show that these people, the deputy and the sheriff, got promotions after closing this case. So I think you're right, Mom. It's very clear and what point it's trying to make that, you know, this is corrupt. There's obviously like a clear, you know, evil force at play that is not really the attack actually on the town itself, but more so how it was handled, how the actual investigation was handled. But I do think it's interesting because it does explore sort of this horrific, you know, hateful idea and how also just fear can cause you to really like stick to, you know, things that feel safe, which happen to be like reinforced racist opinions.
Right. And yeah, no, and I think that's a great, yeah. And obviously we all lean a certain way.
Right.
But which is we're pro-humans. Like that's, but I just think it, I don't know. I don't.
I'm leaning like I'm standing in a mud puddle.
No. And there's like quotes too. Like,
shouts out to 3-6 Mafia.
Dude, you shout him out. Like Ross also says, it's a familiar story we've seen played out time and time again. It's not smoke and mirrors. It's desert sand, hate and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very clear. Like
that's a great quote. Yeah,
this is the story of someone who's being blamed for like sort of an impossible event. And it kind of just shows how two different sides explain that.
Totally. That guy has actually had some of the best quotes in the movie. Oh, yeah, like one of them is like, there are very few people of color that have gotten a fair trial in an all white jury. I mean, it's we all know it, but just like it's
simple.
Just succinct. A succinct,
yeah,
perfect statement in the context of this film, which is like you were saying. And I agree with you. This isn't a both sides film.
It's not,
you know?
Pulling punches. Yeah. It's like Get
this
Out.
This is a pointed satire.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like it has a timely political message and a viewpoint. And
prescient. Also, this was before. Yeah, I mean, you know, the border has always been.
I mean, it's always been.
It's assholes. Always been an issue, but this was before. You know, this was before Trump's. They're bringing crime. They're bringing drugs. They're rapists.
But the reason why that message worked for him is because it's been the message.
It's the building up of this.
And that's how they got all the local get into that, but that's like how we got to this point is that in local elections this kind of mentality has been winning for decades.
And you know, actual crime cases probably too, like that were used as scapegoats to again like fit this narrative, you know. The only thing that's not based in truth is just the fact that these characters are fictional. Like everything else is like pretty much right on the nose for what would happen and what would occur.
If there were zombies. I mean,
okay. I'm going to rein in a bit. We're not a political podcast.
No, we're not.
Go out and vote. Go out and vote for your local man with a brain worm. Make sure.
No.
Please.
He's not local.
If you're considering voting, ask your candidate if they have a brain worm. If they don't vote for them. I only trust people with brain worms. One last point on kind of the political tip, kind of the true crime tip, kind of the mockumentary tip. So in the Bloody Disgusting article by Louise H.C., he apparently did interview the filmmakers, and they told him that one of their biggest inspirations was the documentary Paradise Lost, The Child Murders of Robin Hills, which is the West Memphis 3, if I'm correct.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So that's like a satanic panic 90s thing. Mm-hmm. Three young men that got arrested and convicted for some brutal child murders. And so they're taking some real scary true crime stuff as an inspiration for this film. I think I could see it.
Yeah. Yeah, and knowing that the one guy is a sports documentary, that's probably why the documentary stuff works so well, is that, you know,
well, yeah, they're
putting
all,
those
I think,
pieces together.
I think everyone involved was
real
documentarians, and they got real talking head people. They didn't get actors. They got people that had functioned as some kind of talking head in real documentaries, and then let them riff on this idea. And I did read that a lot of it was improv. They didn't write a full script. They kind of like improv this and had a concept. But man, it worked. Okay, let's wrap up our analysis and all this shit. Let's do a quick obscurity rating on this motherfucker. IMDb votes 3,567. IMDb critics 20. Rotten Tomatoes 1. Again, I'm starting to think Rotten Tomatoes needs to get dropped from this, even though this is just like a fun analysis. Mm-hmm. It seems to be doing no lifting at all. Availability, streaming, like I mentioned, it's on about 5 places right now. Never got a Blu-ray or a DVD release. So we're at about a 5 out of 10. Here comes my big hypothesis that I wanted to talk about. And we've been doing a lot of political talk. We've burned a lot of time, so I want to keep this kind of brief. But, you know, I think this applies to not just this movie, but maybe other movies we're going to talk about in the future. But focusing just on this one, this movie is on YouTube, full HD. It's been on there for 3 years. It's not been taken down. There are close to 400,000 views on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
There are 575 comments, overwhelmingly positive. And the conundrum that I'm finding myself in at this point is, when you have an interesting movie like this that comes out in the straight-to-digital era and goes to YouTube, it doesn't really get caught up in the things
channels
that we're using to do analysis. So it's like when we look at IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes, it's like, oh, nobody's watched this. You jump over to YouTube, and obviously this doesn't apply to everything, because some things we watch have proper releases. They're not allowed to be on YouTube and all that. But this has just been sitting there, like, building up a very strong following just on YouTube, because it's allowed to be there. And so my question was, like, how do we deal with that?
Well, it's the other side of the spider baby coin, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or, like, exactly. It's different of the, like, how do you say the word? Hexagonal dice.
And maybe for the old, or, like, the newer movies, that is something we should take into account. Because I was kind of actually surprised when I saw the amount of, you know, ratings on IMDb. Because while I hadn't had, like, anyone... When I hadn't had any discussions about this movie with anyone except for my dad, who I watched it with, I've seen, like, you know, on TikTok, people post these photos and people, like, talk about this movie.
Cool. So maybe it's on its way to cult status.
Well, it's interesting because these photos are, like, they circulate in, like, a bunch of, you know, like, urban legends and myths, especially on, like, TikTok and YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like, these are pretty, like, I wouldn't say, like, famous, but they're known photos. People have seen these photos. People have agreed that these are scary, even though they're from a movie. They're like, these are scary photos, and they use them all the time. So I was kind of, like, shocked. I was like, I didn't expect it to have such low votes. So I think that probably should be taken into account for, you know, newer movies.
Yeah. I want to think about that. I want to think about that. Yeah, it's a very like grassroots cult following outside of the mainstream building of an audience for a movie. And we haven't tackled anything like that before until we've gotten to this. And so I think it's really awesome because I think, you know, I think this is still underseen in the mainstream, but mm-hmm. then there's like people that are finding it through like weird random channels or just stumbling upon it on YouTube and maybe thinking it's a real documentary. And that's
probably where you know? So and much that of might the
be adding to
right.
that.
Right.
Because again, that is the most Googled question alongside with that.
No, because it's a different audience that maybe doesn't have the tools to right? see
especially
real
if you
from
just
fake
find it
if
on
you're
YouTube.
Yeah, if you're 15
sure.
and you too. Yeah. Or not, I'm not just saying based on age, but maybe you're like, yeah, you're not like a critical film viewer.
It could trick anybody, you know, if you're just like zoning out and you watch that 20 minutes of it, you might be like, wait a second. But for a while there, you're like,
yeah.
Is this real?
You could totally buy it for a second, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that is what's so cool about
if you were stoned
this.
Enough, you could maybe
oh, yeah.
buy it for the
like,
movie.
Like, my mind
what was
if
that?
I found this
you were there
YouTube.
When we watched that goddamn reality show and we got back from Slime Dog, the zombies attack the warehouse.
I don't think I was there.
It was
there,
my
no.
sister and Morgan and I. It, we were like, how could they put these people? We thought it was an actual reality show and it was like they're getting attacked by zombies in this airplane hangar. maybe
so
Tom was there.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, no, I think that is a really, it's just an interesting conversation, and that's what's cool is we can have things on the different ends of the spectrum of this, like Spider Baby, which has been around forever. A lot of critics have seen. It was over the max, you know.
Oh yeah, the public
IMDb,
domain.
But it's uh-huh. it's like, it, not the public domain, but like it didn't fit our criteria.
Oh, totally,
right?
Yeah.
But if you asked, maybe if you asked 125-year-olds if they'd seen that versus this, maybe they would have seen that, you know? So that's
yeah.
like such a cool. Also, I want to say that I was planning to be funny this week, but this movie isn't funny at all.
No, it's not.
It's
there's
no.
And I know we got like into the like
but it is
politics
political.
Of it, but it's
it was
kind of impossible
movie.
Not to talk about because that's the whole like base of this movie is it's very serious, and it's rooted in a lot of, I don't know if this will
the
pick up.
The dog is grumbling.
Albert's just groaning over and over.
Okay, we
grunts?
Need
to, yeah, we do.
This
we
like,
need to
it's time to wrap it.
Our dog
sorry,
is,
everyone.
Our,
he's telling us to yeah, this
our
show.
Our dog is giving us a
yeah.
grumble that
he's
I've never
like,
heard him.
This episode was too political,
before.
And it was not funny enough,
yeah.
but that's just, it's everyone's
it's
different,
serious.
Right? Every movie's different. Every why are you
I don't know. Okay. This is out of control.
Okay.
So let's do the thing that we do where we vote on this movie, and I'll do a count of three while the dog grumbles in the background.
Thunder rolls, the thunder rolls.
Yeah, the thunder rolls. Here we go. Is this a gem or not? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Three, two, one. Okay,
hey.
Let it be known for the record that this is 100% thumbs up across the board. I knew it would be.
Yeah.
This is a good movie.
It's
this is
really
actually,
good.
You know, this isn't just one of those kind of random bad movies that you're hoping like slips through the cracks and you're like, yeah, this is pretty good. I think this is a solid movie. Oh my
Can
God.
Can we mic the dog? Like,
I don't know.
What the
I mean,
fuck is he doing?
I could do it post. I could do it post.
I'm sure.
Before we end this, I think we might have a pick for the next episode.
Oh, right.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with my dog, but maybe he has to poop. I don't know. So I have continuing my plan of just crowdsourcing my movies from my friends because I'm lazy. And the next movie we're going to be watching is called The Mafu Cage. Mafu Cage, something like that.
How do you spell that? I don't know about
M-A-F-U Cage. It's not
F-U.
Foreign. It has Carol Kane at her peak with like
Carol
the best.
Carol Kane?
Yeah.
All right.
You know. And Whitney suggested it. So I'm just continuing on my lazy, somebody tell me a movie, I'll check. And it meets the criteria and nobody's seen it. Except Bob has seen it and he keeps asking me if I have seen it yet. So it might be wild.
Cool.
If yeah. Bob likes it.
I don't know if he likes it.
Okay, but it's important enough where he keeps asking.
It probably has. Oh, I told Rocket I was going to try and put her phrase into the evening, which is, fuck, how much D and Bush? D and Bush. Bush and D?
Bush and D?
So she like within the movie? Censored Dick, but then we say Bush. I don't know. Anyway, D and Bush.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if there's D and Bush.
Okay. Well, you know, I got to say, protect your borders. If I see one more goddamn plate of poutine slip down, I'm going to be fucking losing it.
If I see one more D and Bush, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
It'll be all right.
All right. Go check out Savage Land, everybody. It's on YouTube. It's all over the place.
It's great.
It's not actually all over the place. It's limited places, but it's worth a watch. It's a good movie. Maybe the best movie we've watched.
I think so. It's sorry for being so political. It's just the way we are, you know?
Me. Okay. Vote Beto for president.
Yeah, Beto. Turn out for what? You got to put that at the end.
Lil Jon says, turn down for what? Dirt Dogs on a Gym Hunt. Oh, 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 oh